Welcome to the Not That Great Podcast. I'm Camille McMullen. Happy to have you along for this final time as me, Logan Nieder, and Alex Brown review episodes 9 and 10 of The Last Dance, and then we're done with this documentary, and I want more, and everyone wants more. If you like the podcast, please do us a favor and subscribe on anywhere where you would listen to podcasts, like Spotify or Apple Podcasts or where have you. Leave us a review, 5 stars, because we're amazing. And all that good stuff. Today's Wednesday. We recorded this on Monday. Things are starting to be a little hectic around here, so got to it when I could. We're looking forward to some more documentary films made by the ESPN crew. We got, I think that Lance Armstrong one was up first. We talked about it on the podcast, kind of in the middle of everything. It was a bit of a jumble getting everything done on that episode when we recorded on Monday. But it's done, and it's here for your listening pleasure, all 6 of you that are listening. Make it more than 6 for us. Help us out. Again, 5-star review, share with a friend, all that good stuff. Subscribe, like, visit us at Not That Great Pod on Instagram, where we have 2 pictures. And if you're the type that's a, you know, internet savvy, social media savvy type of person, let us know if you want to help us out and kind of grow our presence a little bit. Until then, let's listen to this. Me, Al Brown, and Logan Nieder for a good chunk of time. I'm there, and then I take off. Logan and Alex bring us home. Moose and Desi in the house. Let's go.
Make it a double. I can take it another. Get so hard to chase it. Live up to. Yeah, it slides away when you're running like my Uncle David, who never lived to escape it. The trouble you were about to cave in. Give up to talking in your basement. We decided.
All right, we finally come to the end of what, and including the fact that golf and NASCAR came back yesterday. There still aren't sports. I'm still saying that.
Don't
so
care.
The only thing, Alex Brown doesn't care. The only thing that was close, the closest thing we had was The Last Dance, which wrapped up last night, 2 episodes, episodes 9 and 10. Alex Brown is here. Logan Nieder is also here. And there'll be 3 of us for a little while, and then I'm going to cut out to raise a family or whatever.
Overrated.
Super overrated. You know, I mean, I don't want to go off on a tangent on how awesome my kid is, but he's being awesome. So it's fine, but it's just repetitive. You know, I'm curious as to why Logan is muted. He can participate whenever he likes. So I don't know why.
I had a couple burps. I wanted
there
to
go.
Get
okay. Perfect.
Right.
We appreciate your professionalism.
Covered that in pre-production. So guys, I guess if we just, we could start with biggest takeaways. For me, the first one I noticed was that Reggie Miller hasn't aged a day, but that's true of every Brown person in this series, except for Jordan himself.
Quite a few of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Jalen Rashad is almost 70.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Dude, Brian Gumbel is 69 years old or 71 years old.
That's bananas. And like, that's,
it's unreal. So anyways, hashtag black don't crack. So we start with is that the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Miller thinking cockily, at least this is the last 3 minutes of episode
that, yeah,
that he's going to retire Michael Jordan, which is, yeah, among the more foolish things an NBA player has ever thought. But Reggie was right in a sense. Like, that team, that was a solid squad. Or it was Jalen Rose said that and was careful not to name himself amongst the greats on that team because he shouldn't. But but he was pretty adamant that they had a very decent team. And they do. And we know the strength of that team from the Reggie documentary, Winning Time, one of the first 30 for 30s. But it was one of those 90s teams that, like, great, but the Bulls still exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, Jordan did that to a lot of a lot of people. There's a lot of legacies that he directly affected as a result of just being, you know, being Michael Jordan, you know, like, basically like, so Patrick Ewing, right?
Yeah.
He knocked him out of the playoffs more than any other one of his opponents. Now, Patrick Ewing was a dude who was the 1985 Rookie of the Year, 11 All-Star selections, you know, usually was one of the top 10 guys in blocks and defense and everything. You have Reggie Miller, 5 All-Star selections, led the NBA in three-point shooting and games played like 3 years in a row, 3 seasons in a row, and he's second all-time in career three-pointers. Gary Payton, 1990, Rookie of the Year, 95, Defensive Player of the Year, 9 All-Star selections, and finished either in All-NBA or All-Defense 9 times. Those careers, while very good, would look a lot more prestigious if there was a section that also said NBA champion, but it doesn't.
Yeah, they don't.
Also, those three are some of the least decorated superstars that Jordan faced, you know? Like, I feel like that kind of solidifies his GOAT status over LeBron, because, I mean, LeBron couldn't post up J.J. Barea in 2011. I'm just saying.
Yeah. J.J. Barea, first of all, sorry to interrupt you, Logan, but J.J. Barea did go to the basketball powerhouse Northeastern University. So.
Oh!
He's putting that
watch out for
power, watch powerhouse.
Out for Logan, go ahead. What are you about to say, brother?
I wasn't going to say anything. I was laughing.
Okay. So an anticipatory at the end of this thing, we figured that there would probably be some like, all right, you young folk that watched this 10-part series, what do you think of LeBron now? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And ESPN, knowing that, this was going to happen, was polling some young folk, or this may have happened more a little while ago, but either way, they put out a poll with a series of questions. And here I'm trying to dig it up on Sporting News here.
I think that they posted it after episode 6 aired.
Oh, it's that long ago?
Yeah, I think that's when it might have been after episode 8. But
that's
I think it was posted 2 weeks ago.
Doesn't matter. It's still like, all right, so Jordan, LeBron, and there's some petty questions in here. And that's one of the key words in our.
There's also kind of some there's some repeat questions too. Like one of them is like, who do you want taking the last shot, and who's better in the clutch moments, or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. It's the same question. Yeah. So better sneaker to ball in, Jordan wins. Better sneaker for fashion, Jordan wins 79-21. Stuff like that. But better player overall is the key, and it's 73-27, Jordan to James. So. If anything, the series, you know, and playing against the guys of those day, and like the guys of those of that day, probably also, I would say, depending on your, I mean, we could bounce around a little bit, but I think that some of those guys also compare favorably to James. They're not going to be 73-27. They're going to lose to James, but it's not going to be as distant. Does that make sense?
It's like some of the other, like, the guys who played during Jordan's era?
Jordan's contemporaries, yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got as many rings as Bird does, right?
Mm-hmm.
3?
Mm-hmm.
But he had 6 appearances, so, I mean, that's definitely – he's up there, and I – LeBron is, and I said this on a previous one, he's probably the most well-rounded basketball player that I've ever seen. But in terms of greatest, Jordan just is. Because if you really ask yourself, and this, you know, this clutch question can kind of be summed up into one thing. If you needed a basketball game won to save your life, who's the first person you're picking?
Jordan for me.
Jordan.
It's Jordan.
Like, it just is. It's beyond what your skill set or the fact that LeBron is, you know, 2 inches taller and 30 pounds heavier of muscle. Like, it's that indomitable force. Like, it's just, he just had it. It's, yeah. It was something mythic. Was he perfect all of the time? No, he had his stumbles. He had his, you know, the times where he got, you know, the ball taken from him or he missed a shot. And I mean, some of his series towards the end weren't spectacular. I mean, that very last one that they did, the very final season, he was gassed. Mm. He was real gassed by the end of all of that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's Jordan.
But Logan, you still ask yourself that, you know, if you ask yourself that question, I think one of the biggest things that comes up in my mind is the Bulls and Jordan, they never saw a game seven in the finals. Jordan never let it get to that point, because as soon as that series got evened at two games apiece, there's no, or even when it got to game five, like, you're just, he had the mentality of
sheer force of will
you will go no further than this.
If it's 3-2, he's gonna snap it off right away. Like, it's the
best way to describe it is what Al Brown just said, is sort of methodical way of winning. It just happened. He had the ability to make it happen.
Right. There's another thing about that too is, and we'll get back to the documentary in just a sec, but if you, LeBron's championship team in Cleveland, and I'm just going to straight up say this as a hot take, it shouldn't even be that hot. If you replace LeBron's Cleveland team with any team, the Bulls, or any Bulls team from 96, 97, 98, they're losing 10 times out of 10. They're not matching up well with the Knicks. They're not matching up well with the Pacers. They're not matching up well with the Jazz. Fair or unfair?
I think that's completely fair.
Thank you.
So you're talking about Kyrie, Kevin Love, LeBron, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Does Kyrie, Kevin Love, and LeBron and that team, which also has the Albatrosses, J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson, I don't like them. Sorry. Maybe with that Jazz team, because that's a two-player team, and you could stretch it to maybe say it's a three-player team. But
And also, Jerry Sloan was an overrated coach, but I can get into that later.
Right. So I don't think that they match up well with the Knicks, and I don't think they match up well with the Pacers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, each team when they're like at their apex, I can see that.
I mean, those teams are at least five players deep, and the Cleveland teams were not.
I mean, Cleveland team. Henderson Varejao was a hell of a
Varejao. Fuck you. You know, we were the sentence has never been spoken is we were about to lose that game, but then Zydrunas Ilgauskas really came up.
Big Z.
So that's not a thing. The rest of that poll is for the closest it gets is 57-43. Who do you trust more to pass you the ball? And Jordan wins that somehow, but that feels like on name recognition alone.
That would be LeBron. LeBron is way more accomplished and skilled in terms of distributing.
Yeah.
I think that overall
in the last few years. Go ahead, Logan.
I think that overall that is true, that LeBron absolutely is better at passing the ball when it's needed. But when you look at it under the microscope that is in the documentary, whenever it needed to be done, that's when Jordan passed the ball.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah. Well, because the win was what matters, and contested shot is never better than an open shot, generally, on that team. I mean, I guess – I don't know, actually. I just spoke myself into a quandary. Would you rather ditch it to a set and ready to shoot Kerr than have Jordan kind of work the magic? I mean, maybe it's a coin flip.
I think it's all situational.
That's situational, you know.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, Jordan was just so good at decision-making.
Right, so Jordan has the better situational awareness, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Not only that, but I think that Phil Jackson's coaching called for what needed to happen.
Yeah. And even within that, Jordan was still able to flourish so hard. Like, and that's more like, that's more, what's the word I'm looking for? Fuel to the fire for his greatness. And I don't think that an offense where, in theory, sharing the ball is supposed to be the key tenet, I'm not sure that most of your players today that are considered greats of this era, they're like, what, share it? What the fuck out of here? You mean share the, you know what I mean? Like now you see stuff on SportsCenter and it's like, oh yeah, they would both be on the same team, but they both need the ball, you know? And that's one of the things that makes me most upset about hearing NBA news. It's like, oh no, he needs the ball. Does that make sense to anybody?
I mean,
to contrast me on that.
No, I mean, there are dudes who are, you know, the term is ball stopper or whatever. And I feel like there's different degrees of that. I mean, there's different types, you know, there's a more of a Kyrie Irving ball dominant player or a James Harden ball dominant player. And then there's like a Marcus Morris who you pass to him and it just stops, but varying degrees. I don't know. I mean, case by case.
Yeah. The flu game. This is going to be the biggest
takeaway
from first question. All right, so to anyone who's not watching that listens to this podcast, that would be a Venn diagram that I would love to see. But Jordan plays game 5 of the 97 finals with what we all thought was the flu for 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
Until last night, multiple people corroborate that a late night pizza was ordered. Jordan eats the whole thing, according to his story. So looks like that can still eat a whole pizza. Must be nice. And that's how he gets sick, and then still comes out.
Yeah, there's questions. Yeah, so
ask the questions.
I just want to kind of like run through this really quickly. So it's late. MJ is starving. His team like ate without him, and he's pissed about that. They're in the outskirts of Salt Lake City. They're not even in actually Salt Lake City. And the only place that's open is some crappy pizza place. So according to Tim, the trainer, 5 delivery guys show up to the door. Red flag. Mm. What pizza joint has 5 dudes working for a pizza place in the outskirts of Salt Lake City at 11 o'clock at night?
All right. So let's stop you there. Let's stop you right there for that first one. Okay. Does whoever calls in the pizza say it's Michael Jordan?
Yeah, that's part of it. Is like, you know, hey, Utah, Michael Jordan needs a pizza. Here's the hotel and room number.
Right.
Like,
okay.
That seems a little odd.
So second question. The fuck did whoever called in the pizza do that?
Exactly. So here's what I think might have happened. Okay. Right. So pizza's being delivered to a hotel. They're in a very small town outside Salt Lake City.
Okay.
The guy who is at the desk could have very...
Hello? Hello?
Uh-oh. Oh, Al Brown got disconnected.
Logan's there. Alex was so upset that...
Hello? Am I gone? What happened?
Yeah, you're back.
Oh, there you are.
I'm back.
I'm not cutting it out. I don't have time.
That's fine.
I don't have time to edit these days. Well,
what was the last thing you heard me say?
Small town.
Something like
that. Yeah, so pizza guy. Yeah. So someone who works at the hotel very well could have known, you know, the pizza place, the pizza guys, the delivery guy. So it is very possible that this wasn't some poisoned or spiked pizza. But five dudes were like, oh, my God, we might get to see Michael Jordan up close. Come with me and deliver this pizza.
Fine. So in that instance, then, I didn't think this to begin with. I don't think that the presence of the 5 guys is nefarious. They're just like, I think that what happened was no one on that team was like, I'm going to call in a pizza order. They called the front desk and they're like, hey, get a pizza to us. And the front desk did so.
Yeah.
Like, it's for Michael Jordan. And then 5 dudes are like, yo, we're going.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, I mean, honestly, there was this talk about food poisoning or whatever. I mean, if it's a shitty little pizza place that's probably not doing a lot of business in the outskirts of Salt Lake City, there could have very well been contaminated meat, bad meat, bad cheese, super oily.
Maybe you combine that. Maybe you got like a fish pizza or something.
Well, I mean, yeah, it depends. We got to get down to the real journalism and find out what kind of fucking pizza this was. But, you know, combined shitty low-quality pizza, I'm just assuming because it's Utah, and, you know, cigar smoke and possibly a whiskey or two or whatever he does could probably fuck your stomach up pretty bad. But you can't rule it out that there was something shady. I mean, Boston has a history of doing dirt to fuck with other teams, but sure. Ours was more like pulling the fire alarms of the hotels where the Lakers were staying or something like that. Utah is a notoriously tough place to play.
I think that they made it seem like the five dudes came to make sure the poison worked. That's kind of how they were like, yeah, I mean, like, because this, first of all, Jordan's personal trainer looks like a guy who, like, makes sure the money's where it's supposed to be. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he kind of looks like that kind of guy. So he was, like, automatically on screen suspicious, like, dude, five guys. What are these five guys coming over here for? You know what I mean? Like, so that, but like, they didn't, like, they weren't like, hey, let's do that again, but maybe you ease off the Goomba routine. So they obviously made it seem like those dudes were the guys who were like, wanted to make sure they could go report back to their boys. Like, dude, we successfully poisoned Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And on top of that, if that was the case, are you guys fucking morons? You thought that
would Yeah, exactly. I mean, hey. Stupid people are out there. So
yeah. So that's fun stuff. Logan, any thoughts on that? I asked him specifically because he muted because he was burping.
No, I was muted because you know, sound quality stuff. Something about it just seems off.
Yeah.
If it's because. What I want to know is who called in the order.
It's because that
who called the code red?
Like, yeah, did you order the code red? I want to know who ordered that pizza, because if it's the guy at the front desk, that's absolutely what happened. Those five guys showed up because the guy was like, it's Michael Jordan in there. And they were like, yes. Oh shit, we got to see him.
Yeah.
And if it was one of the other guys, you know that they didn't say the pizza's for Michael Jordan when they're in Utah in the middle of an NBA finals, just because.
Yeah. Because who would announce that?
Right. Why would you? Like, they're already open. You're going to get your pizza. You don't need to, like, you're not calling a pizza that's five minutes from closing to be like, oh, well, we can't really deliver it. Well, it's for Michael Jordan.
Okay, fine, no problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the pizza place is already open. Like, they're gonna bring it to you. I don't know. It just seems like
it's a weird story, and I feel like there's just details that are missing. So one of the other details that's kind of weird and gross about it is that apparently, like, so Jordan was pissed that people had ate without him, that, like, dinner wasn't, like, scheduled around him. So that's gets hilarious. This whole pizza, and he's like, no one fucking touched this pizza, and he spits on it. And apparently Jordan had a history of doing that with food in the past to, like, mark his territory. Like, who does that? Like, a five-year-old does that.
A douche.
Like, don't eat my food and spit on it. Like, oh, motherfucker.
Yeah, a douche. That's who does that, too.
I mean, I guess it depends on how mad you are, but...
I guess, but that's just like, who spits on food?
Yeah. Entitled people?
I don't know.
Michael that's Jordan an odd spits one. On...
That's an odd little food, wrinkle right? in that whole story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Logan's right. Michael Jordan spits on whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, I guess. Fair enough.
The end of that series... by the way, and this is – the flu game is against the Jazz, so never mind. So let's go back to
Indy.
A moment that I texted Al about last night, that after the Pacers series, Jordan sees Larry Bird in some back area and just completely suns him. He's just like, yeah, dude, nice try, bro. And then – and he goes, work go work in that golf game somewhere. And Larry Bird's like, thank you for talking to me, basically. Like, dude, who – I told Al, It was the flexiest flex of all time.
Yeah, it was quite a flex.
All right, so then we move further out of flu game territory. I'm up against my hard cap here. I'll do another 5 minutes because my kid's body still isn't moving. So there's some, and I don't mean that like he's dead. He's just still asleep. There's some. We've amassed all this time, and I did a little bit of research to find talking points for this. And it was something I thought of before I did the research, but it's true that there are some people that should be prevalent in this that weren't. And there's, and you can't really explain why. You can't really say like so-and-so declined a thing for this interview because it's sports. It's not fucking politics or, you know, terrible history or something like that. So, I mean, I feel like we got more Jalen Rose than we got Charles Barkley. I feel like we got more Judd Bushler than we got Larry Bird. You know what I mean? Like, and Alex, you've been proven to be a scholar of how this was made. Do you have any insight as far as like, I think we know about how it took some time to get John Stockton to even talk about anything. But do you have any insight about how that came down and how like so many, like, We've spent 4 or 5 episodes with Isaiah Thomas and nothing from Luke Longley, nothing from, very little from Ron Harper, maybe just, because he kind of looks like DMX.
We didn't get anything from Karl Malone.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there. I mean, so a lot of his opponents didn't want to do it. I mean, Stockton and Reggie Miller were huge holdouts. Barkley and Jordan, their friendship is pretty much over because I don't remember exactly when, but Charles basically made a comment about Michael saying, as long as he keeps hiring, you know, yes men and his friends to run that organization, they're not going to win anything. And Michael took that personally. They haven't really spoken to each other since. And I feel like a lot of it was just editing, you know, and there are some things that I knew they weren't going to put on. Like they're not going to ask Jordan's first wife to make any sort of an appearance.
No, of course not. Yeah.
The only time they really involved his children was for them to talk about how rough a place Utah was to play and how crazy those fans were. And apparently that's a notorious thing among NBA players is that you don't bring your family to Utah because there's just been so many instances of things happening.
Am I the only person that is on this podcast that's allowed to venture a guess as to why?
Oh, white people.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, I can say it. I'm one of them.
No, good. Thanks for taking it up for your people, man.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's white people.
No, there's a thing about that. Spike Lee talks about that in the Miller documentary. Is that when he goes to Indiana? When they're facing the Knicks in, was that 93 or 4?
I think
it's 94 because Jordan's gone. So he's like, the first thing you have to understand is Indiana's the birthplace of the Klan.
Yes. Some traditions about Indiana, just to touch on that. I didn't realize a Indiana Pacers tradition was hitting an abandoned car with a sledgehammer. Did you see that in the very beginning of episode 8? The tradition of hitting an abandoned car with a sledgehammer. What the fuck, Indiana? And then they cut to that blonde woman screaming, in your fucking face. If the woman who looks like a sporty Stepford wife is screaming obscenities at the top of her lungs, what's the drunk dude in the bleachers doing? Like, he might be hitting the same abandoned car with a sledgehammer. We just put it in neutral. We got it up the escalator. Hit that thing with the fucking hammer.
Well, clearly.
What was going on in Indy in the 90s? Jesus.
Clearly hitting stuff with hitting an abandoned car with stuff really works for team success.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of all the
tried and true tradition of champions.
Just ask Purdue University how much they've won.
Yeah. First of all, don't. Because that's Ben Perlman's alma mater.
I don't care.
Yeah, who cares? He hasn't been on the podcast in years.
Yeah.
So I'm going to cut out because I have to, but I'm going to leave this. I'm not going to take my answer off there. I'll stay on the air for this question. it's only because this is, I'm ending this part of it, but you guys keep talking about basketball and the series because there's plenty more to touch on. But we are going to do these same kind of episodes for the next three, or actually I think it's 4 weeks of ESPN films that are upcoming. So next week we've got Lance Armstrong. The week after that, we've got the Bruce Lee documentary. And then the week after that, we've got Long Gone Summer, which is probably the most anticipated. Sammy versus Mac.
McGuire. Oh, man.
ESPN 30 for 30 after the Jordan documentary. So one of those is two parts. So we're looking at four more weeks of content here. Thank you to the ESPN gods. I'm going to ask you guys which ones you're looking forward to the most. And I'm going to answer first because it's my podcast and fuck you guys. I'm going to say that Bruce Lee was something or someone that I'm not going to say I admired him, but we definitely have all watched a shit ton of Bruce Lee movies without necessarily knowing a ton about the man. So, and I own Enter the Dragon. It's a phenomenal film. If it's on TV, I'm watching it. I don't care what the hell else is going on around here. So I'm going to look forward to that one most, even though it would be the least traditional sports documentary that they would put out. But I'm interested to get into his story. I'm good with Lance's story. We know he's a dick. I don't need to see more documentaries proving that he's a douchebag. And then I also don't need more documentary proof that Sammy Sosa is now white.
Sam Sosa. He's Sam Sosa now.
Yeah. Sam Sosa? All right, cool. So I'm going to go with Bruce Lee, and I'll kick it to Logan. Which one of the next three are you looking forward to most?
So it's got to be – I agree with you on the Lance Armstrong portion of it.
That been done to death.
They've made two or three of them already, like at least hour-long specials about it. So what else is there to talk about? We know why he did it. We know that he did do it. I don't really need to know more in-depth reasons as to why he did it. I'm really looking forward to Long Gone Summer because that was one of the biggest moments in baseball history that was really made. It was a rivalry that wasn't a rivalry. Like it was just a home run contest. You know, like there wasn't any bad blood between the teams specifically. Like it was just, all right, so this is something that we can market since they're both on track to break the single season home run record. Let's pit them against each other and see who comes out on top. And I'm really looking forward to specifically what Mark McGuire says about it, even though I'm pretty sure he was absolutely juicing.
Oh, he's just going to say that he wasn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, yes.
They steroids. Were, but they, yeah.
Regardless,
I will, just to be a total douche, I will correct you in that there is bad blood between those two teams because the Cardinals and Cubs are very, very huge rivals. But it wasn't as if, I think that what you mean by that is that rivalry was definitely pushed to the side because no one gave a shit.
Right. During that season, there wasn't really a rivalry. Nobody was interested in that rivalry.
Yeah, no one cared. People, that's why. Yeah, you're right.
Nobody cared about it. Like people on the East Coast, like anybody outside of those fan bases didn't give a shit.
Right. And it looks like they kind of also ignore Bonds in this. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they just like act like he doesn't exist.
Yeah, because he wasn't in the conversation.
Wait, what year was that then? Wait, when is the Long Gone Summer? I assume that this is just a blanket thing about, because it wasn't.
No. This is the race. This is the race.
It was the home run race
to beat Roger Maris's record.
The single season home run record.
This isn't. So this is like 99? No, it's before that. That was 96.
What?
I think 96. I think.
All right. So 96
or 97.
So we'll figure it out.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, here's my question: why? Because I remember where I was when Bonds hit the record hitting home run, and that was in
2000.
That was in 2001.
2001.
I remember where I was. I was at Jillian's. And then I started working there in 2001. And that was like, I remember that those 2 years, 01, 02, maybe 03, bleeds in 03 a little bit, being the biggest story was home run, home run, home runs. And then 04 starts the Sox being the biggest story. So,
yeah.
But I don't necessarily remember too much about, like, that was going on while we were in high school, Al?
No, I was not even in high school yet.
All right, so I graduated
because I was still going. I was still going to summer camp, and I remember I was getting issues of Sports Illustrated mailed to my parents' house, and then they would send it to me, and so I was keeping up with the home run race via Sports Illustrated magazines.
What's mail?
Yeah, exactly. I was in the Berkshires of Massachusetts, and I was getting magazines mailed to me. Yeah, so I wasn't even in high school when that happened. So I want to say it was around 96.
Via Camelback.
Yeah, exactly. Via Pony Express.
Yeah,
there you go. Carrier pigeons.
But I would say that I'm most intrigued to see how they're going to get into the summer. The McGuire Sosa race, because I remember following it obsessively when I was a kid. Me and a couple of my friends at summer camp were like, you know, huge on this, and we're trying to find information wherever we could, whether it through written correspondence or the occasional phone call on a payphone at our summer camp, like to just get numbers and like what these guys hit. We had counselors who were like, you know, going and finding scores for us and shit. So I would like to see some of, I don't know how, I guess since the veil of steroid use has already been lifted,
hold the fuck back.
They could get a little bit more in depth in what was going on and some of the like darker moments of that entire time. And also like the thing is that with that home run race, it really harkened back to a completely different time in baseball. It was Maris and Mantle all over again. It was something that was, you know, Herculean to have these two guys just like hitting these bombs at such an incredible clip that we hadn't seen for so long. And I don't know if they'll touch upon this, but part of why Barry Bonds started using steroids in the first place,
because he couldn't keep up with those guys,
was right. Because even though he was a million times the baseball player that either one of them was, and was already going to be going into the Hall of Fame, everybody was talking about them.
No.
So that one, super intrigued by. Bruce Lee, enormous fan. I have watched a lot of his like biographical stuff. I don't, if they do show me some stuff I haven't seen before, then I will be delightfully, you know, surprised. I would love that. And then with Lance, yeah, Lance is a douche. Hopefully they go a little bit more into, you know, peeling back some of his fucking nonsense or whatever, but yeah. So I would go.
You can peel back whatever they want. They're just going to find more douche.
Yeah. Fraud.
There's just one thing that I want to touch on with this. So it's just something that I kind of noticed that all of us, I think, involuntarily did. We're so quick to dismiss steroid use in baseball that when it happens in a sport like cycling, is it really that much worse?
It's not so much the fact that he was blood doping, because fucking everybody was. Fact that he was this messianic fraud, basically.
Yeah, no, he
like he was he put on this projection of being this like, you know, the
Messiah
live strong
for cycling,
live strong, you can overcome anything if you just work hard enough and you want it. And meanwhile he's shooting needles up his ass or whatever the hell it was he was doing. So that's more, it's not so much the steroid thing, because it's been rampant in cycling for a long time, but it was more him, you know, trying to clearly be this role model image and a hero that was fraudulent. And for the record, you know who called him out on this first?
No, was it you?
Nope. George Carlin.
Carlin.
Yes. That is
George Carlin was like, you know what? Fuck Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, fuck him in the asshole with a big rubber dick.
Yeah. And while we're at it, fuck Tiger Woods too.
Tiger Woods too.
I fucking love George Carlin.
God, I miss him.
And yeah, I will. Sam, I, oh God, we would, well, we need him so bad right now.
We would need him so bad right now.
Okay. So I'm not calling Armstrong a douche because of the steroid stuff. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, do a bad thing doesn't make you a bad person. But the fame that Armstrong got based off of
his, a total lie.
Total lie, yes. And like you could say, but you could say the same about McGuire and Sosa.
Yeah.
But they tried their best to fly under the radar as much as they could, except for the home runs. Does that make sense?
Well, I wouldn't even say that they tried so hard to fly under the radar. I mean, McGuire was at his locker room and there was just some sort of steroid just right there in a pill bottle. Yeah, yeah. And a reporter was like, hey, what's that? And McGuire just flipped out, was like, fuck you, don't look at my stuff. Yeah. I was like, maybe be a little bit better at concealing your illicit drug use.
All right, so I didn't explain it great. So what you just said, though, about Armstrong and about like all of his Livestrong stuff and blah, 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 whether or not you thought that he did all the Livestrong stuff was a thing that was a good thing to do, and I think everyone thinks that it was a good thing to do, he tried to use that to mask what he was really doing. And on top of that, he tried to do it by sheer force, just by being like, yeah, but I got Livestrong though. It's like, yeah, but you might be cheating. Like, yeah, but
and
like,
he also tried to destroy people that accused him of,
true,
of doping.
That as well. So he like weaponized his douchery.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? but like,
nicely
Sosa
put.
And McGuire, sure, and Bonds. Bonds, actually, no, I'll put Bonds in that turbo douche category with Armstrong. But Sosa,
different. I don't know about that one. Proceed.
Sosa and McGuire were like, all right, we're gonna juice up, we're gonna hit home runs, we're gonna bring some eyes to baseball. And if stuff comes to us because of that, then fine. You know, and we're gonna live our life behind technicalities. Well, it wasn't illegal at the time. Well, this thing that we found that's new, this androstenedione, that's not illegal. It does the same thing as other stuff, but that, you know, this exact word of a drug is not illegal, right? So I can do that, you know? So I would put that under guys who aren't bad people did a bad thing, and I'll give them some leeway and forgiveness. I think that Lance Armstrong, for that amount of time, was a terrible person. And it does not. And also, if you watch the Armstrong Lie, which I've been like trying to be like, yo, the Armstrong Lie is made by the best American documentarian of the last 20 years, Alex Gibney. The Armstrong Lie, the entire base of that movie is Gibney went to Armstrong to make a movie about his comeback. And then all the shit came out and Gibney was like, yeah, what the fuck? Why am I here? And Armstrong was like, oh, sorry, I kind of fucked up.
Yeah, clearly.
So douche.
Yeah.
Right? Douche. However, I'll put McGuire in that kind of douche category because of his Congress performance. Sammy Sosa, obviously,
God,
no one can actually
so
see him because if you look directly at him, your gaze reflects. So I'm interested to hear what they have to talk about, but lived through it at an age where my sports mind was formative and active. That's why I'm looking most forward to Bruce Lee, because I legitimately don't know that much. I want to hear some shit.
Cool.
So, all right, you guys keep going, and I'm going to give you a jump off point real quick. Jerry Reinsdorf telling Phil, at least, that I don't give a fuck what Jerry Krause said. Y'all can come back. Discuss.
Okay.
Before you get into this, I one more thing about Lance Armstrong.
Cool.
I don't,
I'm still here.
Any,
it's fine. Let's listen to that. Yeah, too.
I don't hold anything against him strictly because of his role in Peter LaFleur getting back into the finals in dodgeball. That's all I'm gonna say about him.
Nice, nice. All right, so Reinsdorf, I'm kind of curious Reinsdorf has gotten way too much slack in this entire thing, and they kind of touch on that towards the very end. But I feel like Jerry Krause basically acted like a meat shield for Reinsdorf for much of it.
Isn't that a general manager's job?
Not really. No, that's not how it should be.
That doesn't come in the contract. Like, you have to take on all of the shit that I as an owner would normally do unless my name is Jerry Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I guess depending on what organization you're in, that can be part of the job, but that's not really how it's supposed to function.
It's not how it's supposed to function, but isn't that how it normally does?
I wouldn't even say that necessarily. Again, it's based off of owners, and there's a lot of really shitty people who are owners. But I'm glad that Krause did get some credit at the end
Though they shit on him the entire time.
Yeah. Even though he can't really be the best GM, as Scottie Pippen said, if he's this culpable in tearing it all down. But finally, Reinsdorf gets some shit. I don't like looking back on some of Reinsdorf's, Dorf's, however you pronounce his fucking name, his quotes and stuff. I'd be interested to know like what sort of follow-up questions were asked, what went in. Cause I feel like he bullshit a lot of that. At first I was like, wow, he told Scottie Pippen that he shouldn't sign that contract because it's not a good value. And I was like, wait a minute, there's no way he said that to Scottie Pippen. Like, there's no way. Where the hell was I? So Reinsdorf got a huge, huge pass for a lot of this. Basically, Jerry Krause was the meat shield. Krause did finally get a little bit of credit posthumously.
And he got it. He did get it from Scottie Pippen too, which I was surprised by.
Yeah. Scottie calls him the best GM, even though he can't really be the best GM ever if he's, you know, this culpable and tearing it all down and ending this giant, you know, thing. And I think that Reinsdorf probably spent a lot of his interviews just completely bullshitting it. I don't believe that he ever told Scottie that he shouldn't sign that long contract. I don't believe that he genuinely or sincerely said to Phil Jackson in actual earnest, like, hey, come back for one more year. He probably said it in a way where Phil was like, no, I'm not doing this. And also like the whole iPod, Jordan is watching when he's talking about how like, these weak excuses about why they couldn't run it back because of the market value of Scottie and Dennis and Steve Kerr and all of these guys and how it would just be impossible. And you can just see Michael rolling his eyes.
Oh yeah.
And he, it's never a conversation that the two of them had ever had. And this is, you know, 20 plus years later. And
it's the first time that Jordan's ever heard him make any sort of conversation about this subject.
Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the day, the buck stops with Reinsdorf. Like, if he wanted to keep it together, he could have. It was his paycheck, but he didn't want to pay. Like, that's just the tall and short of it. So I'm not.
I think it also, and they touch a little bit on it after almost immediately after they talk about what, you know, what Reinsdorf says and Jordan's response to it. They touch a little bit on it where Reinsdorf goes to Phil Jackson and says, hey, if I asked you to come back for one more year, would you? And Phil Jackson basically says, I think it's time for a break.
Yeah.
I think that if I did come back, could we get a seventh? Sure. But I think it would be a slight to Jerry Krause. And it's just, I think it's time. And I think that I need a break.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel bad that a dead guy got dumped on so much, even though he did kind of deserve some of it, but that Reinsdorf, for the most part, really, really should have been cast as more of a
villain, so to speak. Oh, you cut out again. Yeah, I can't. There's nothing here. So Al Brown.
Hey.
Oh, there you are. Oh, and you're
That's
gone.
Weird. No, oh. I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
Huh.
Yeah, that's second time it's happened. That is kind of weird.
Yeah, that's odd. That's never happened before. So basketball. So one of the final things that we'll just kind of touch on is this final
Utah Jazz.
This final finals with the Utah Jazz. So kind of one of the takeaways that I got from this was that Jerry Sloan was a super overrated coach. I'm really surprised that he lasted that long there. I felt like
scored 54 points.
I'm getting there. So his lack of strategy beyond just Stockton and Malone pick and roll and the occasional Hornacek jumper can work in the regular season, but in the playoffs, when you have an excellent defensive team and they've played you 3, 4, 5 times in a row, that's going to get shut down. And when that starts to happen, you need to be able to adapt. And Sloan seemed completely unwilling to make any sort of adjustment.
And if he wasn't unwilling to make an adjustment, he was just plain lost.
Yeah, and which I could have been as well. So Malone starts getting double teamed on nearly every single possession. And that is a huge contributor to why they scored less than 60 points in a game 3. And then kind of like, you know, so when Jerry Sloan inevitably gets fired, I'm sorry, you know, retired on his own terms in air quotes because of Deron Williams in 2011, Williams got absolutely buried that he was a coach killer and he betrayed the coach and he's a diva who drove out such a respected coach and legend like Jerry Sloan, who has this decorated career. And Deron Williams was like, yeah, we don't even watch film.
Yeah.
Like that's if that was something that you were doing in the early 80s, late 70s, you're not doing film analysis sessions or, you know, breaking down film, whatever, however you want to term it. That's one thing. But if you were still doing this dinosaur approach in 2011, yeah, no, I feel like Sloan probably was just beloved by that team.
He was beloved by the fan base, I think, more than anyone, because he got their team to the finals.
They just had a bunch of like almost success with him and he had been there for a while. But like, I really, and also the whole thing going back to the flu/food poisoning game, and they're doing the press conference. And apparently Sloan was like, I didn't know he was sick. I didn't want the team to know he was sick. Which is kind of like fucking idiotic strategy, because if you see any sort of opening, especially when you're talking about this dude who is a known hunter, serial killer, competitor, whatever you want to call him, if you have some sort of Achilles heel, like, hey, this dude's feeling like shit, elbow him in the stomach a couple of times, or, you know, something. To not try and
make him
target
work.
A wounded animal is just bad. It's bad coaching. And I feel like he was so stuck in like, no, we're just going to stick to what we do, what's in our game
plan.
We're
going to stick to the give and go.
Now there's something to be said. There's something to be said for systematic familiarity when you're talking about, you know, on your side of the ball. But it does go the other way, like I just said, and a team's going to catch up to that, especially when you have one that was so historically great on the defensive end of the ball.
Historically great defensively, but also able to adjust and change their game plan as it was needed.
Yeah.
And that's why Phil Jackson's one of the best coaches ever.
Yeah. Yes. I completely agree. I had forgotten how much I like Steve Kerr. That was one of the things that I came away with. I remember liking him. And not just as a player, but even when he was like, you know, working as a commentator or when he was the GM of the Phoenix Suns, like he was just always such a solid guy. And I feel like some of the success and craziness that went along with the Golden State Warriors kind of made me forget that I actually really liked that dude, and that it wasn't just for some clutch shooting, but just because he was kind of an awesome fucking guy.
I was going to say, because of the type of person he is.
Yeah.
He's just a very likable person, and he's a hard worker.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a testament to his parents, and I honestly had no idea about his father. I didn't know that story at all. Which is obviously quite tragic and, you know, historically a big deal. And it was a trying time.
What surprises me about that, and what doesn't also surprise, like at the same time doesn't surprise me, is how, so one of the producers of the documentary asked the question to Steve Kerr, did you and MJ ever talk about your dads together? Like you had this both in common. Did you ever talk about it? And he said, no. And I think that it was surprising to me, but then the more that it sort of sunk in, the more it wasn't surprising at all to me, because Michael Jordan wasn't that type of a person to want to share that emotional side with him, especially in the middle of a basketball season. Like he's not going to go into stuff like that when he's in competitive mode.
Yeah. But he also did have that person to go to in Gus, who was like his, you know, somewhat of a father figure, security guy who was with him all of the time.
Absolutely.
And you know, Gus's wife even says, because Gus is, you know, now passed away, that Jordan would call him at like 2 a.m. crying, thinking about his father, and Gus was there to be like, you know, an emotional support net. So Jordan had that in his life, which fortunately he did, because, you know, awful.
Yeah.
I think two of the most impressive people in the entire documentary are Steve Kerr's ma and Michael Jordan's mom. I think they are two really strong matriarchs who just have like a very, I don't know if a sense of grace is the word that I'm looking for, but there's definitely, they're just classy, intelligent, strong women. And I think that they were just, how they were able to not only talk about the tragedy in their lives and in their sons' lives, but also clearly being incredible parents, raising these people to be in the position that they came into. I came away really, you know, liking Steve Kerr and his very clearly intelligent mom, who's still at like, oh, she's almost 90. I think she's like 86 years old, and she's still a professor at UCLA.
Yeah.
Very cool.
No, both of them are very, very obviously strong women that were put in a difficult position and just adapted
and made it work
and made everything
and
work
and handled it in a way that a lot of people do not have the fortitude to be able to, you know.
Yep.
Awesome ladies. Yeah. So there's one last thing that I just want to touch on before we call it. And that is, I was surprised to hear so many people say this, but the now controversy of Michael Jordan's push off on Brian Williams for that game winner to, you know, basically clinch that last championship, ring number 6. Now, I always thought it was a push off.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
I always thought it was a push off. I was like, he does it, like you see it, and then you hear Bob Costas saying it was the equivalent of a maitre d' escorting you to your table, and I was like, no, it wasn't. Also, I am 100% certain that in a 60 Minutes interview that Michael Jordan did in 2005 with Ed Bradley, rest in peace, where he even admits that he pushed off on that guy. Like, I'm dead certain. I have not rewatched it. It's been years, but I'm like, no, wait. Jordan even said himself that he cheated on that play, and now he's saying that he didn't?
So, I'm dead certain
that he admitted to cheating on that play.
I haven't seen that documentary or that interview that you're talking about, but I remember you bringing that up and saying it. The thing that I didn't see ever, this is the first time that I had seen it, was the opposite camera angle. We always saw the push off from the back. You could see the back of the
jersey. I've heard there's another angle where it doesn't look as...
They show it in the documentary.
Yeah, like a lower angle, right?
It's the lower side angle, and you can see Jordan's hand basically like fall off of his hip. Like, it's very clear he does not push off. Like, and if he does, it is not enough force to push Williams as far as he got pushed, or as far as he went. Like, and the more, like, I rewound it on the DVR recording that I have. I rewound it and watched it a couple times. I was like, wow, he really didn't push off. So that, for that camera angle that always gets shown anytime that this gets brought up, that camera angle is deceptive.
Yeah.
And it looks very much like you're like, no doubt about it, he absolutely pushed off of him. And then they show that second camera angle, and that's not the case.
I swear to you, I have to find this Ed Bradley interview, because I'm pretty, like, in the interview, he's talking about, like, all of his career accomplishments and yada, yada, yada. And, like, he even told us about the times where he cheated. I'm standing by it. Footage be damned. I'm telling you, he told Ed Bradley he cheated.
I believe you. I'm just telling you what I saw.
Yeah. No, I know. But is there anything else before we wrap it on this this incredible journey that we've had doing the Last Dance? Any takeaways, anything you wanted to say in closing?
I think that we kind of glossed over the Reggie Miller aspect of it, where he there's a moment that they go back to when he's a rookie, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing the Bulls, and they have to play the Bulls a lot in the regular season. They're in the same conference. And there's a game that they're talking about. Reggie starts.
They get kind of scrappy.
Yeah, they get a little scrappy, but one of the things, and it goes right along with the trends of this documentary, Reggie Miller scores 2 points. And then, you know, Michael Jordan's not having a great game. And then, guess what? Reggie Miller says something. And look what happens.
Yeah. So then, don't talk shit to Black Jesus. was Jordan's response.
Yeah. And then Reggie Miller says, from that point on, I didn't refer to him ever as Michael Jordan. I referred to him either as Jordan, Black Jesus, or
the Black Cat.
The Black Cat.
Yeah, legendary stuff. Don't talk shit to Black Jesus. Like, can you imagine the brass ones?
Knocking like, together. Can hear him. You can hear him clack together as he's playing.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus. Just the you think about this and you're like, who do you think you are? Like, anybody else says that? Anybody else. It doesn't matter who they are. LeBron could say that and I'd be like, who the fuck do you think you are? Michael Jordan says it and I'm like, yeah, don't talk shit to Black Jesus.
Yeah.
You kidding me?
I mean, Michael Jordan was ballsy enough to try and pull off the Hitler mustache for an extended period of time. So I'm not surprised that he also referred to himself as Black Jesus.
I mean, was that an intentional, like, trying to pull off that mustache, or could he?
I think he was just like, fuck it, if anybody can do it, I can. Yeah. Like that's like no. Yeah. Like I can get away with it.
Yeah. I don't think anybody would have called him on it.
Not to his face anyways.
Right.
Maybe Charles Oakley would, but that's it.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I just thought the Reggie Miller aspect of it was nice to see because he was such a pest. Oh yeah,
he was such a pest.
He was so good.
He was really great.
That Pacers series that was one of the most difficult that they had to go through, if not the most difficult. I don't think it's the most difficult, but. If we're talking about
over the course of that run, the 2 three-peats, it was probably their series in the earlier part of the 90s against the Pistons, late 80s, early 90s against the Pistons, and then that Indy team. I think those are the ones that gave them the most legitimate problems.
Yeah, I think it's Detroit is number one. That was the most difficult team, and I think Jordan even says it in the documentary.
Yeah,
pretty sure he says they were the biggest problem aside from Detroit that I ever faced in my career. And yeah, that's very apparent because that was close.
Yeah, hard fought series, and that man. That Indy team was deep too.
They were so good.
That Indy team was deep. And yeah. I would have liked to have seen Bird try and coach a little bit longer. But he said before he even took the job, he was like, I'm only going to do 3 years because after 3 years, they stop listening to you because that had been his experience as a player with coaches. So yeah, he was just like, I'm done. But if I really wish that he had given it a go and gone a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But one of the – I'm pretty sure – if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm pretty sure he's the only person to win MVP, Coach of the Year, and Executive of the Year. Legend Larry, baby. Legend Larry.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's true. I was surprised because, you know, as a kid, time sort of, it's not that it's not real, but you don't take notice as much as you do as an adult. Yeah. And I always thought that Larry Bird coached longer than he did. They popped up the dates under his name when they're interviewing him, you know, Indiana Pacers coach, 97 to 2000. I went, what? There's no way. He coached way longer than that. And I totally forgot that he had, you know, he moved on to the executive side of things.
Yeah.
But it's, I agree with you. I think that he could have possibly brought a championship to the Pacers if he had stayed coaching, especially because Reggie Miller played for as long as he did.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I would have liked to have seen him go a little bit longer, but you know,
it is what it is.
It is what it is. It happened. Oh well. Yeah. And so the Last Dance happened, and now it's over, and now we have to try and figure out things to do. And fortunately, we have these 30 for 30s coming up that we'll be able to analyze and break down and talk about. But unfortunately, the Last Dance has come to an end. So I guess that's the end of this one.
Yeah.
File it away, and hopefully this will be up on Anchor and Spotify and all that good stuff soon.
Well, I'm looking forward to continuing our coverage of the minimal sports world that we have.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to do sports news in the COVID world.
Yeah. We'll get back to live sports soon enough.
Let's hope so. All right.
Fingers crossed.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to Not That Great. Once again, I'm Al Brown for Camille McMullen and Logan Eater. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next time.